Hello and welcome to Listen Closely with John DB. I am your host, the aforementioned John DB, and I am beyond excited for this episode of the weekly podcast because I'm joined by a guest co-host. I was about to say a special guest co-host, and that's not to take anything away from him by not saying special guest, but it's going to be a regular co-host, I'd like to think, on this podcast, and that is my Chris Charmello out on the West Coast. Chris, good evening, and thank you for joining.
Hello, John. My pleasure.
Well, you sound really good. I'm not going to lie.
What's that?
You sound really good. I'm not going to lie. Do you have some HD connection?
No, I've just got the good old iPhone.
Well, let's see that what it is. I have the Android. Oh, so there you go. That's why it's better.
You got to get with the times. That's what kids are doing today.
You make a better living than I, so maybe. I don't. So, you know, Chris, you and I have spoken of doing a podcast for quite some time. Indeed. And I think we wrestled for a while with what the right topic would be and what the right theme would be. And I think we've been friends for 35 years plus.
That's right. 35. God.
Which is mind blowing. And I think we are bound by a few things, as we've oftentimes said, nostalgia being one of them. Mm-hmm. We enjoy random trips down memory lane. Music. I think we have music that are closely aligned. And I don't know what else. I mean, we're also lactose intolerant, but I don't think anyone can really hear a podcast on that.
I mean, that's really all you need. Nostalgia, music, and a little bit of, you know, lactose intolerance. And you've got a 35-year friendship.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So tonight, perhaps not ironically, we are really taking a look back and a close look at a hugely successful popular album that was released 35 years ago. And tonight we focus on No Jacket Required by the one and only Phil Collins. Now, I know that there's probably some folks out there listening. Actually, there's probably not anyone out there listening, but if at some point we get some followers, they're probably going to be thinking, well, you know, these guys in their first podcast, they go all out and they tackle Sticky Fingers by Rolling Stones. So you're talking one of the sexiest, most timeless, slinky rock albums of all time by the most badass band imaginable in the early 1970s. And then you follow it up with Phil Collins. But here's the thing. I think people too easily and too quickly forget just how damn talented Phil Collins is and how important he was in the 1980s. And I know you're a huge fan. Am I correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, listen, Phil is certainly going to, some people are going to, when they hear the name Phil, immediately think of cheesy soft rock. And, you know, if that's what you think, fine. But, Phil is so much more than that.
I concur. And correct me if I'm wrong, you saw him in concert, not solo, but you saw him on the 07 Genesis reunion tour.
I did. I saw him at Giant Stadium, in New Jersey.
How was it?
It was fantastic. I mean, you know, at that point, that was 07. So, you know, they were getting up there in age, but they played for, I believe, over 2 hours. And, it was fantastic, yeah.
Well, in preparation for this, I dragged out No Jacket Required. I happen to have it on vinyl, and
same here.
And it's you know, interesting with the orange and black color scheme. you know, my thoughts listening to it, Chris, were it's not a masterpiece necessarily, and I don't know that I necessarily would say I love the album, but it is undoubtedly a classic, and it's important. It's a very important album. And here's why I think, though maybe not a masterpiece, and that's just my opinion, Mm-hmm. But why I think it's important. This is a snapshot that captures a hugely important and successful singer, songwriter, performer, just about heading into his creative and commercial peak. Or if not right in his creative and commercial peak. I mean, 1985, 1986, Phil Collins, I think. And he was anywhere and everywhere as a singer, songwriter, drummer, producer. He's playing on other people's work. He's producing other people's works. He's doing double duty in that he's playing with Genesis, and then he has this hugely successful solo career. And this album was huge. So a little bit of background before we really dive into our individual thoughts on it. Album's recorded largely in 1984, shortly after Phil had completed producing and playing drums on Behind the Sun, which was Eric Clapton's 1984 album. The big hit off of that was She's Waiting, which you could tell has very heavy-handed Phil Collins drumming. Phil's also on a bit of hiatus from Genesis. They had that full 1983 self-titled album, which I think, in my opinion, is their best album with Phil Collins fronting it.
What are the big ones off of that, John?
That's All, Legal Alien, Mama, Home by the Sea, right. Taking It a Little Too Hard, Just a Job to Do.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I know I'm missing one or two others, at least. And let's not forget, he's also riding the wave from a wildly successful single, Against All Odds, 1984. The movie comes and goes without much fanfare, despite having Jeff Bridges, James Woods, and the gorgeous Rachel Ward. But it's really not a hugely successful movie. The song's a different story. It wins a Grammy or an Oscar. So Phil Collins didn't really do no wrong at this point. He records and spends the rest of 1984 recording, No Jack Required, comes out, it's selling an insane amount of copies. And the critical response, I pulled a few reviews and said that, and this is great, Collins' recipe of tense vocals spiced with saucy horns and splashy electro jitterbugging often leaves little room for real feeling to squeeze through. When he slows down and lets his smoldering moodiness take over, the effect is magical.
Okay.
New York Times said the album was refreshing and that Collins was adept at setting a suspenseful or menacing mood. And perhaps not coincidentally, it was on to a Grammy for Album of the Year, as well as a few other Grammys. So we just set up the album a little bit. And I mean, I think it's safe to say that you've probably listened to this album in some way, shape, or form, be it LP, be it in your parents' car when you were 8 years old. See, you've probably listened to the album a thousand times. I think it's safe to say.
My mom, I believe, had the disc, which I ended up basically stealing at some point, and I think I still have it somewhere in my apartment here.
And this is so she had the CD.
The CD, yeah.
Wow, you know, so that was probably the original pressing of the CD.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you there.
That was probably the original pressing, the original release of the CD.
Oh yeah, I think this was, you know, she probably got it right in 85, and you know, with Phil's disembodied head floating on the cover there.
Of course,
she played that all the time. You know, in the car, at home, wherever. For a few years. I mean, it wasn't just come and go in 85.
I think the album had a long shelf life. When you look at the singles that released on the album, you know, I think four of them are released as singles. Susudio, One More Night, Inside Out, and Take Me Home. And so that right there, four singles released over the course of, what do we figure, at least 12 to 18 months. That gives the album really cause to be put on repeat over the course of a couple of years, if you know what I mean.
Right, sure.
Now, knowing the album as you do, we break things down by, you know, the weak moments or the sleeper moments or the peak. I'd be curious to know. I mean, obviously, you have a strong affinity and a strong connection to this album, understandably so. Is there a moment on the album, sort of the nadir, a track that doesn't really do it for you, or just something about the album in general that really just never quite sat with you?
Yeah, you know, I think if I had to pick one track, not that it's a terrible song or anything, but I think I would go with Only You and I Know. Doesn't really do a lot for me. It's fine. It fits with the album, but it kind of, I think, pales into a lot of the other big, powerful hits on the album. You know, my general comment about the album, I think it's a great album. I don't think it's by any means perfect. Not in the way that Sticky Fingers, which you did last week, is
right.
Perfect, unassailable. I think with No Jacket Required, I have a little trouble with the order of the songs.
Absolutely.
I don't really feel that it's cohesive. It doesn't necessarily take you on a journey. It feels more like a collection of songs kind of pop together. I think the beginning and the end do have more of a sense of purpose, but there's a lot in the middle that's just kind of mashed up.
I couldn't agree more. I do. One thing I do really like is the end that he closes outside to with Take Me Home.
Yeah.
And there's a Take Me Home, I think, is a classic example song that on the surface is very upbeat, but it's really, you know, kind of a sad song.
Oh, yeah. God. You know, Take Me Home, listening to this, I was trying to think, you had asked me before what my favorite track on this is.
Oh, we haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, we, okay. Take Me Home's in the running, but I'll hold on to that. But so, I do agree that Take Me Home is a great way to end it. And I think Susudio is a nice way to start it, as ridiculous of a song as that is.
Yeah, I never liked it, but it's a great way to start it.
Exactly, yeah. It's the classic kind of upbeat, just getting you up and out of your chair, you know, kickstart the album off.
Here's for me the weakness of the album, and a lot of it stems from what you said, one being Only You and I Know. Just I feel like the album doesn't get enough momentum by having that being the second track. I also feel that classic albums, what really makes them classics are not the hits. What makes a classic album a really bona fide classic would be the deep cuts. You know, I spoke last week of Sticky Fingers, and when you look at that album and you think to yourself, Christ, I mean, the deep cuts are I Got the Blues, Sway, and Moonlight Mile. I mean, that's just, it's mind-blowing. My thing with No Jacket Required, it has the three or four huge commercial hits. I don't feel particularly wowed with the deep cuts, with maybe one, possibly two exceptions, which I'll get to. But I feel like Only You and I Know, I Don't Want to Know, Who Said I Would, they don't really do a lot. So I think that kind of holds the album back a little bit and forces the listener to really rely on the hits.
I'd agree. Those three songs you mentioned, I will sometimes get those three mixed up. They all sort of feel like generic filler a little bit.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the sleeper moment. You know, is there a moment in the album that surprises you, either on occasion or fairly regularly? It's not something that most people would think is being a great moment in the album, but something about it resonates with you.
Yeah, I think for me, it's a moment that, in terms of the song, is a real high watermark for the album. Not a very well-known song, I don't think, but it's also the placement of it, I feel like, is symbolic of the weakness of the album that we talked about. And that's Long, Long Way to Go. It's a fantastic song. You took the words right
out of my mouth. Yeah, I think it's arguably the one of the, if not the best song on the album.
Absolutely. It hits you in the gut. It is dark. It is one of the reviews that you read, I think, used the word menacing. That's where the menacing comes from. It's that song.
Absolutely.
It was in an episode of Miami Vice, right?
Season two, Miami Vice, yes.
Yeah, and a very dark moment. Fantastic song, but coming in between Only You and I Know and I Don't Want to Know, it's very strange.
I almost feel as though they could have put it to close out side one, especially how the song just abruptly ends.
Yeah, I could see that, or at least towards the end, as you know, you're kind of progressing in the album where you're just getting a little deeper into things. You know, the way it is that the first few songs and a lot of songs on this track, Phil and some of Genesis's more poppy stuff, to me always has this feeling of it's like an 80s movie where the young kid moves to the big city and is like trying to make his way, you know, and it's like montage music of him,
absolutely,
you know, getting the coffee for the boss and like, you know, nearly tripping and spilling it and that kind of stuff. And then in the middle of it, you throw in Long, Long Way to Go, and it's a dagger to the heart, and it feels out of place. But that being said, incredible song.
Incredible song featuring Sting, actually.
Yes.
And I think their harmonies in the song and the refrain are just out of this world. What's the zenith of the album? What's the best moment? The mountaintop, the peak for you?
For me, I really like the end. I think closing it out with Take Me Home, you know, as you said, it has sort of this upbeat, energetic feel to it, but it's a really emotional, deep, and in some ways dark song. So I always like that. I think ending it with that, you know, it doesn't let you off the hook easy. In some parts of this album, it is kind of happy-go-lucky, but that really is a bit of a gut punch at the end, if you really listen to it.
Agreed. You know, but it's interesting because if memory's serving me correct now, it is a gut punch. But do you remember the music video? And isn't he just posing in front of like various monuments around the world, as if to say, "Look at me, I'm Phil Collins, I'm traveling the goddamn world."
Phil in the back of a truck, like pulling away at the end. Is that right?
You may be right. Now I have to go on. So it's hard to feel bad for him, I think. I although that's not my zenith of the album, I agree that it very well could be. For me, and this is going to be crazy because it's such a overplayed commercial moment. I really think the album's best moment is One More Night.
Yeah.
you know, I've heard this song more times than I care to throughout my life. But it has an element of being a classic Torch song. And by that, I feel like had it been written 20 or 30 years earlier, it would have been considered a standard. It would have been part of the Great American Songbook, although it was written by a Brit. It's something that Sinatra would have recorded if it came out in 1965 instead of 1985. And imagine, if you will, for one minute. I mean, Sinatra was still actively recording in the mid-80s. Imagine if Old Blue Eye did a cover of One More Night. Think about that for a minute.
That would be incredible. Yeah.
It would have been amazing. It's not unlike, thematically, it's not unlike the very famous Sinatra song, One More for My Baby, One More for the Road. It's got that boozy late night, as I said earlier, Torch song quality to it. And I really feel it's a very tender ballad. And I just think it's one that's held up incredibly well, despite the fact that it's been so overplayed. And here's another thing to consider, you know, when you think of great popular ballads in the 70s, 80s, 90s, they've almost all been remade by someone. I can't think of a single version of a single remake of One More Night. I don't think anyone's even bothered to try.
I can't either. And that for me, it came down to Take Me Home or One More Night. Incredible song. I totally agree with you on that. I probably didn't pick it because probably just because I've heard, well, I wasn't sure what you picked. I thought you might go Long, Long Way to Go.
It was a toss up.
Yeah. I think because I've heard it so much more, like you said, you know, you can get a little bit numb to it, but man, I think that's an example too of, you know, I wouldn't consider Phil to be a brilliant lyricist by any means. And he writes his own stuff, right?
The studio is pretty deep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think One More Night, you know, does get into where just some of his kind of simple lyrics can be so powerful. I've been sitting here so long, wasting time staring at the phone, and I was wondering, should I call you? Then I thought, maybe you're not alone. It's, you know, we've all been there.
Yeah. More times than I care to mention.
Yeah. It's really just a dagger to the heart. Yeah, it's simple, but it's beautiful and really poignant.
And that's where the whole Sinatra thing comes into it. I really could have imagined Sinatra just doing a very gravelly, you know, late in his career, you know, slightly off pitch, off key version, I think. And I think it would have been powerful in its own way. I mean, hell, he covered Eric Carmen's Never Gonna Fall in Love Again, for crying out loud.
Wow.
Yeah, and he didn't do a great job with it, but I think he could have done interesting things with One More Night. I'm curious to know, in looking at the album as a whole, how well do you feel that it captures the sort of zeitgeist of the era? And you know, do you feel that it had a strong impact culturally on music and just culture in general in the mid-1980s?
Oh, I mean, I think it is the epitome of 1985, especially for middle to upper middle class white people. I mean, suburbia in the 1980s, that, yeah. And I do feel like that's one of the things that is so great about the album, but it's also a bit of a drawback, you know, whereas like with Sticky Fingers last week, you could have listened to that album at any point, I think, from 1971 until today, and it would hold up. There's a lot of moments in this that I think I still like almost all the songs here, but I don't know if they certainly don't stand the test of time, especially the deeper cuts, the way that something like Sticky Fingers does.
But we can agree, like you said best, it perfectly sums up 1985.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
Without a doubt. Like I said at the onset of this, it's a snapshot, I think, of that era. And, you know, in my opinion, I think it so incredibly well captures the sort of zeitgeist and the vibe of 1985. I mean, there's synthesizers, there's drum beats, not just Long, Long Way to Go, but also Take Me Home, and I want to say one other song appear during season 2 of Miami Vice, as does Phil Collins have a guest role in season 2 of Miami Vice. I mean, right? It's 1985. Phil fucking Collins, need I say any more? Yeah. You know, a very interesting thing too, which was rather groundbreaking at the time. Phil was a big advocate for the Roland TR-808, which is a drum machine. And, he used it most famously on the Face Value album, In the Air Tonight, of course. So, you know, early on, there's synthesizer and you hear the TR-808 in the background. And various artists were using it in a lot of dancey techno songs in the early 80s, real upbeat stuff. And Phil, of course, used it in some harder rock songs. No one had used the TR-808 in a ballad until Phil Collins decided to put it in One More Night. And that was considered revolutionary at the time. And it got me thinking, who else might have copied that? And there was a song that came out of the United Kingdom about 1 year later, another wildly successful ballad, which uses the Roland TR-808. And I don't suppose you can take a guess at what it is.
Oh, man. So this is 86 we're talking about?
86, a very popular ballad. Singer, sort of a one-hit wonder stateside, but he had a series of hits overseas. I'll give you a hint. It has the title of the song has a color in it.
Is this Christa Berg?
This is Christa Berg, the Lady in Red.
Wow. Okay.
Think about the beginning and you hear the Roland TR-808, perhaps inspired by Phil Collins. You know, another interesting fact, Phil could do no wrong in the mid-80s. He gets invited to Prince Charles' 40th birthday party. And there's a piano there. So, of course, the anticipation is he's going to play a song. Halfway through the party, they invite him to get up and sing one song. Now, you're Phil Collins. You got a string of hits. He could have done Against All Odds. He could have done a piano version of In the Air Tonight. It's no secret that at this point in time, Prince Charles and Lady Di, their marriage is a little shaky. What's the one song Phil Collins probably shouldn't sing off of No Jacket Required?
Oh, wow. He did it. One more night.
What did he sing?
One More Night.
No.
No?
No.
Oh, Doesn't Anybody Stay Together Anymore?
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Now, incredible, right?
That's amazing. Wow.
Inevitably, and we have a couple minutes left here. Yeah. I mean, you grew up with this album as I did. I think you even more so, talking about your mother playing in the car. My mother was too busy playing Julio Iglesias cassettes and occasionally Billy Ocean.
There's something to be said for that.
I'm not making that up.
That's
something to be said. Yeah. We're not going to a Billy Ocean episode here. Julio's fair game. But is there a moment or two, either in your lifetime, where a certain song from this album sticks out, or a moment in a pop culture reference or a film where the song, a song from this album really sort of is prominent and plays an important part?
Yeah, I can remember as a teenager at one point, you know, so this would have been early to mid 90s, going through some rough adolescent type stuff. And I can remember coming down to my parents' living room at night because I couldn't sleep, and I would sleep on the couch, but I would bring my, it was probably my Discman at that point, with No Jacket Required, and listening to especially Inside Out and Doesn't Anybody Stay Together Anymore, Take Me Home. You know, it was odd because a lot of these are kind of gut-wrenching love songs. And whatever I was feeling wasn't anything to do with a woman at the time, but there was just something that resonated with those. And I think it's, you know, we talked about how this encapsulates the mid-80s. And I think one way it does is these lyrics, it's kind of the romanticization of pain where that's happened so much with so much of the 80s music. And this album really does it where, you know, even when he's singing about heartbreak, it makes you want to go through that heartbreak somehow. It feels cool. And some of those nights on the couch listening to this, I think, you know, it just helped me get through those. Just that sense of pain, of looking at pain in a way where it was something to be conquered and something to almost be romanticized, like a piece of your story rather than actual hurt.
That's powerful. That's deep. We have about 1 minute left. I have a recent experience about 6 weeks ago, a little bit more. I was on a cruise ship in the midst of, you know, the early stages of the COVID-19 paranoia. The ship was half empty and I was in the lounge and there were about 8 other people in the lounge, and the lounge act, who were quite good, played One More Night. Mm. It was my last night on board. I'm somewhere off the coast of the Bahamas. And it was beautiful. And they sandwiched One More Night between Chicago's Hard to Say I'm Sorry and Lionel Richie's Say You Say
Me.
Oh, my
God.
So it was, it was a very moving moment in a half empty, in an empty lounge aboard a half empty cruise ship at the beginning of a pandemic. So it was really, I didn't know how good I had it then.
That's almost worse.
My guest tonight was Chris Jarmillo, the album Phil Collins, No Jacket Required. Chris, thank you so much. That is all the time we have. and we'll be back soon enough.
Thanks so much, John.